show has begun.
Yes, Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with Wallace Eaton, Al McCogan, June Whitfield, Herbert Mostyn, and the Keynotes, all inviting you to...
Take it from here.
Jimmy, you're just power mad. Why don't you give up this idea of running for Parliament? The only support you can rely on is the lunatic fringe.
Well, let's leave my moustache out of it, Bentley. I have created a much-needed new political creed,
yeah?
Jimunism. You may read all about it in my news sheet, The Daily Shirker.
Oh, well, look, Jim, I'm reckoned to be a pretty well-informed chap politically. In fact, I never go to bed without reading a few pages of Hansard and Son.
Hansard and Son? Oh, Bentley, the book you're reading is Hans Anderson.
Oh, just the same, I've never heard of this political party of yours.
The principles of Jimunism are fully explained in my manifesto, Das Kapital. We are a party formed to protect the oppressed minorities of this country.
What oppressed minorities?
Well, people who still listen to the radio. Or housewives who still wash their woolies with bars of soap.
Yes, but the country will never stand for you leading a government, Jimmy. Anyway, they've already had a rump parliament.
Bentley, I am convinced that the hour will eventually call forth the man. Jim. History tells you that. Only when the time was ripe did Julius Caesar come to the forum.
Oh, nonsense. I saw it at the Regal. And I tell you, I wouldn't have gone in, but I thought it was one of those saucy Italian films.
I tell you, Bentley, I've got the whole party program planned. We've even got the Jimunism salute, a defiant one-handed movement that can be done by anybody.
Anybody?
Well, provided they're not wearing boxing gloves. Bentley, won't you reconsider? I guarantee that if you join us, it will double the membership automatically.
How many would that bring the membership to?
Well, instead of just me, there'll be the two of us. Vote for Jim!
Oh, yes, vote for Jim!
Take me in your arms and never let me go. Whisper to me softly while the moon is low. Hold me close and tell me what I want to know. Say it to me gently, let the sweet talk flow. Come a little closer, make love to me. Kiss me once again before we say goodnight. Take me in your loving arms and squeeze me tight. Put me in a mood so I can dream all night. Everybody's sleeping, so it's quite all right. Come a little closer, make love to me. When you're near, so help me, dear, chills run up my spine. Don't you know I love you so? I won't be happy until you're mine. When I'm in your arms, you give my heart a treat. Everything about you is oh so sweet. Every time we kiss, you make my life complete. Baby doll, you know you swept me off my feet. Now's the time to tell you, make love to me. When you're near, so help me dear, chills run up my spine. Don't you know I love you so? I won't be happy until you're mine. When I'm in your arms, you give my heart a treat. Everything about you is oh so sweet. Every time we kiss, you make my life complete. Baby doll, you know you swept me off my feet. Now's the time to tell you, make love to me.
It's absolutely sickening, sir. It's a ceaseless succession of sinfuler thoughts on simple, unsuspecting citizens. I stand on my white, sir.
I wish I could stand on your right. I'm copying the lot in front here.
I'll get action, sir. I'm writing letters to the newspapers, finding myself disgusted of Tunbridge Wells.
Yeah, well, look here, disgusting.
Disgusted, sir. Disgusted, Ted.
Well, look here, Ted. You can't expect us to...
I expect... expect everybody to. I've a strong complaint about the PG.
What, old Roger?
Not the paying guest, sir. The Postmaster General.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Answer me this, sir. Answer me this.
Oh, wow.
Why do they make London telephone duets with so that however they're stacked, you've got to lift the other three up to get the one you want?
Oh, I don't know, I suppose.
And it's... another thing, take hotel bills. Look at the way some hotels charge.
There's a very nice place which invites people to stay a fortnight for nothing.
Well, where's that, though?
The Common Cold Research Center.
No.
Yes, all you have to do in return is to let them try by various means to give you a cold.
Well, what sort of people go there?
All sorts of people. I even heard of a young couple who spent their honeymoon there.
No.
In fact, with the aid of June and my partner, the man with a thousand voices, we'll show what happened to this couple.
MacDougall, this is no the way I expected to spend my wedding night, trying to catch a cold. It's miserable, Angus.
Aye, but it's cheap. And as soon as we catch our colds, Maggie, they'll let us alone. Give us a kiss before yon doctor comes. Come on, Maggie, a wee kiss.
Oh, Angus.
Mr. MacDougall, you know our rules. All patients to keep 15 feet apart until they've got their colds.
But we're newlyweds, Doctor.
Well, as soon as both of you are bunged up with real streaming head colds, your honeymoon can begin.
Yon wee man's gonna get a small wee slush wi' a loaded sporran. Come on, Maggie, lass. The love of MacDougall's like a flame that nae man can quench. Come on, now.
Will you please stick your feet in this bucket of cold water?
Bucket of cold water? Oh, Doctor, have your nae hurt? I've a wee wifey waiting.
I've got a bucket for her, too. Come on, now. Come on. Feet in, both of you. Now, ring the bell at the first sign of a snuffle or dry throat. And, who shut that window? Well, have fun.
Oh, dear.
Angus?
What is it, my love?
Perhaps we should have gone to Capri after all.
Dinna fash yourself, Maggie, for Angus is still with ye. Here, put one foot in my bucket and we'll hold toes.
You know the rules, MacDougall. One person, one bucket. Now, any news for me yet? Oh. Any signs of a tickle?
The opportunity'd be a fine thing.
Yes?
Don't you see, we want to be it.
Come on, lass, come on. Come on, wee bridie, let it blast. Oh, she's done it. Oh, Doctor, if only I can catch a cold, we could...
Oh, come on, Angus, force yourself.
Achoo! I've done it. We've pulled off the double. Now, Doctor, now will we be left alone?
Yes, of course. From now on, you'll have utter privacy. I won't Oh, dear, that's taught it.
What's the matter?
Matron, will you please have another camp bed brought in here immediately?
Tithe's talking point. Once again, we meet the Glamms, our family of ordinary people facing up to life's problems. Today, their talking point is it better to be unemployed than constantly out of work? Over to the Glamms.
Oh, Ron, it's so exciting seeing you home from your first day at work. You must be so tired.
Yes, Seth.
My breadwinner. Let me put another cushion behind you. Now, Ron, if you're not too exhausted, tell Eth all about the job.
Well, Eth, the foreman said that it was a job that didn't require any sort of intelligence or initiative, and that I was ideal for it. And he would discuss my pay after the first shift.
Come on, what did you get?
I got the sack, eh?
Oh, Ron, on the first shift? Oh, it isn't possible. possible?
I did it, Eth. The timekeeper said it was a record.
But why, Ron? What did they sack you for?
Idling. I stopped working to listen to music while you work.
Ron, and I had such high hopes, Ron.
Well, don't cry, beloved. All your mascara's running down your cheek. Eth, you're making your face look like a zebra crossing. Now, don't, beloved. I want you to look nice for tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
The boys at the Labour Exchange are giving me a welcome back party. Yes. Come on, Eth, give us a kiss.
Oh, no, Ron, not now. Well, you
come
have
on.
To be in the mood.
I'm always in the mood. Come on,
Ron,
Eth, it won't do any harm.
Now.
Well, we might as well just have a little...
Hello. The British working man hard at it. I just popped in for one little thing, Ron. Can your mother borrow your mouth organ? She's having a bath and the door won't lock. Oh, dear. I must say, very awkward for her with my brother Ted staying in the house. Him being the type who'll have a... Hello. Do I detect a certain tenseness in the old atmosphere?
Dad, Eth's crying.
So she is. There, Eth. Ron, have you got a hanky?
Yes, Dad.
Well, for heaven's sake, use it. There now, Eth. Now, what's up?
Ron's lost his job, Mr. Glum. He's been out of work for 7 years and loses his first job after 3 hours.
Wow, that's nothing to get yourself all aerated about. You're not upset at being out of work, are you, Ron?
I like it, Dad.
You know what it is? It's just a temporary setback, that's all. You might even say it's a challenge. You remember the words of Socrates, the ancient Greek photographer. If at first you don't succeed, just keep on bashing away. Look at Bruce and the spider.
What time's it on, Dad?
Eth knows what I'm talking about.
Yes, I see what you mean, Mr. Glum. Ron, you've got a very wise and understanding dad, and I hope you appreciate him.
It's one's duty to stand by one's child. Wait till you're a father, Eth. If I can't lavish affection on my baby, because that's what you'll always be to your mother and me, Ron.
Oh, Dad.
You are, Ronald. However much of an overgrown lout you may be to your friends, you're our baby boy.
Thanks, Dad.
After all, if I don't make it my duty to protect the fledgling of my nest from life's storm-tossed buffets, then why am I here?
To borrow my mouth organ, Dad.
I'm warning you, Ronald. My baby boy's going to have a clip round here lavished on him in a minute.
But won't Mrs. Glum be angry with Ron for losing his job, Mr. Glum?
No, Eth. She's a mother. When I tell her, she'll take it as calm as what I've done. You look. Mother! Ron's got the shove from his job after working there a mere 3 hours.
Mr. Glum, she sounded horrified.
Yes, she was, but not at Ron.
What do you mean?
My brother Ted just walked in the bathroom to clean his teeth.
No matter where I go, you'll still be with me, darling, for you will always know.
Brandies and soda, please.
That's 15 you've had, and totting them up,
yes,
you know. Counting
them. I say, Edwards, my wife wants to go to a theatre. She wants to be taken out of herself. Which theatre would do that, eh?
An operating theatre, I suppose.
No, you know what women are. She wants a play with a bit of meat in it. They don't seem to write plays nowadays with meat in them, do they?
Oh, I don't know, Grace. There's The Seventh Veal. The Chop at Sly Corner, Porky and Bess.
No, 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 Bentley, you know what his Grace is after. One of those plays where a titled married lady is confronted by an unscrupulous bounder from her past, and should she tell her husband and thus jeopardize her happiness, or should she, well, listen for yourself.
It is dusk at Cheviot Towers, stately Sussex home of Lord Toby Cheviot and his wife of a year. In the gracious drawing room, Lady Lucinda Cheviot sits writing. An impassive butler stands waiting.
Forbes.
Your ladyship?
Will you please hang your tongue out? I wish to moisten a twopenny halfpenny stamp.
Certainly, your ladyship.
Thank you, Forbes. Ah, here comes Lord Toby now.
Hello, my dear. Evening, Forbes.
That will be all.
Very good, my lady.
I say, my dear, dash decent, but I mean, say, what's the reason for the glad rags?
Oh, Toby, don't you know what today is the anniversary of?
The signing of the Treaty of Albania between the Elector of Saxony and Gustavus II of Sweden?
Oh, no, Toby.
Oh, just a shot in the dark, you know. Well, what is it the anniversary of, Lucinda?
Our marriage, Toby. Oh, Toby, it's just a year ago today that you married me.
Of course. Wasn't I stupid?
Toby.
No, don't misunderstand me, my heart. It's been the happiest year of my life. I'm a very lucky lordship. And you, Lucinda, have you any regrets?
I've been happier than I'd ever have believed possible. This lovely house, these beautiful clothes, the 3 cars, the 18 servants.
I know exactly how you feel, my dear. A number of us were only saying to each other in the House of Lords the other day, "It's smashing being rich, isn't it?"
You've been more than kind, Toby.
Oh, thank God, I know.
You've never even questioned me about the sort of woman I was before we married, and I think I should tell you, Toby. I have a skeleton in my closet.
Really? Anybody I know?
Oh, Toby, please listen. Oh, I don't know how to tell you. You were not the only man in my life.
You mean you were married before? Oh,
only slightly. It was a tempestuous affair. He was a scoundrel, fascinating but unscrupulous. And then 6 years ago, he died. I don't know how.
Didn't he write and tell you?
All I know is, the Tangiers police found his braces on the beach at Casablanca. Oh, Toby, you don't know what a relief it is to have got this confession off my... There's a strange man on the terrace.
Where?
There. That tall figure lounging insolently against the marble statue of Venus.
Oh, yes. By Jove, yes. Hey, you! That's no place to stub your cigarette out!
My apologies, sir. I wonder if you could tell me... Do you do shrimp tea?
Shrimp tea, sir? Did I hear you right? This is Cheviot Tarzan. I am Lord Cheviot.
My dear Cheviot, just the chap I've been seeking.
I have a letter of introduction to you from David, 1st Earl of Niven. It says, dear... Then there's a blank. It goes on. This is to introduce Captain Greville Faversham. Please give him every courtesy, and whenever possible, play cards with him for large sums of money. Yours, etc., etc.
Etc., etc.
Well, I haven't finished that bit off yet.
Well, my dear chap, what must you think of my boorishness? Do have dinner with us by all means and stay for a month or two. I mean, this is my wife. By Jove! Why is Lucinda stretched out on the floor and pale as a sheet? I don't laugh. Take your hands out of your pockets and give me a hand with her.
I cannot take my hands out of my pockets.
Why not?
I left my braces in Casablanca.
Forbes, serve Captain Faversham with another roast chicken. I say, Lucinda, you've hardly touched your semolina. All right, you look ashen-faced.
Oh, it's nothing. I sneezed into the ashtray.
I gotta agree there's something wrong with you. I mean, say you're shaking like a blancmange in a railway dining car.
I'm a little chilly, that's all. Oh, Toby, be a darling. Run and get me something to put round my shoulders.
Of course, my dear. I'll nip along to the harness room right away.
Well, Lucinda, my dear, it's been a long time.
Captain Greville Faversham. Sid Figgins.
Correct. And before you start your approaches, Lucinda, remember that in the eyes of the law, you are still Mrs. Figgins.
I've got to talk to you. If you've returned from the dead to break up my marriage with Toby, I won't let you. Oh, don't you realize? I love that fat, red-faced oaf.
Oh. You do you? Well, then, let me make you a proposition. Give me my taxi fare back to my flat, and you'll never see me again.
Where is your flat?
Hong Kong. Shall we say £40,000?
£40,000? But that's almost a week's housekeeping money.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm badly in need of ready cash. There's been a spot of trouble with the regimental fund.
So you've been drummed out of the regiment now?
No, they couldn't do that. I pinched the drum as well. Remember, Lucinda, you're still my wife. And I might say a very desirable property.
Let me go, you unmitigated cad.
No, if I can't have the cash, I'll take the goods. Come, let me autograph your lips with my pencil moustache.
No, unhand me. I shall send for the servants.
I've always thought of this.
Hello. Making our guest comfortable, Lucinda? I won't interrupt you. I've just popped in for my coronet. Cook wants to crimp some pastry.
Teviot, prepare yourself for a shock. You may as well know your marriage to Lucinda was not binding.
It was, you know. You should have been there. The speeches went on for hours. The champagne was flat. My feet were...
No, Toby. How can I explain? This is my first husband. You are not legally married to me. He is the legal one.
Good grief. Fancy me married to a chap like that.
No. I'm married to him.
Well, thank goodness for that.
You see, Lord Cheviot, contrary to your belief, I'm not dead at all. I'm alive.
Prove it!
I've got witnesses. I have you where I want you, Cheviot. If you want Lady Lucinda, it'll cost you £40,000.
Oh, I say, that's a bit steep.
But she's a snip at 40,000. Look at her. Pre-war, one owner, bodywork hardly dented. Why, compared with your wealth, what I want is just a drop in the ocean.
Very well, then. Forbes?
You rang me, Lord.
Take this gentleman out and drop him in the ocean.
Very good, sir.
No, take your hands off me. Let me go. Oh, don't do it! No!
Toby, you had him drowned. Oh, sometimes I think you're the most thoughtful man I've ever met.
A pleasure, my dear. Anything, any time. Remind me to tip Forbes sixpence for his trouble. My dear, no one can possibly come between us now.
No one, Toby, except possibly... Edgar.
Edgar?
Oh, perhaps I should have told you about him too, dear. Edgar was a husband I had before the husband who's just had it. Well, it's all right, Toby. He emigrated to America, and I've never heard
Lucy,
as much
honey,
as a word.
Lucy, where are you, Lucy, baby? Guess who's here?
Oh, lummy. Stand by, Forbes. Another tanner coming up.
Binowitz and the augmented BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Dick Bentley and Professor Jimmy Edwards, encouraged by Wallace Eaton, Al McCogan, June Whitfield, Herbert Mostyn, and the keynotes. Frank Muir and Dennis Norden wrote the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in next week and...